presenter was the winner of the PhD presentations. Brooke Levy, who is a first-year PhD in EPI, will be telling us about her presentation, which is Selective Cutoff Reporting in Studies of Diagnostic Test Accuracy of Depression Screening Tools, Comparing Traditional Meta-Analysis to Individual Patient Data Meta-Analysis.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here and talk to you about my research. So selective outcome reporting is something that is well understood in the context of clinical trials, where people will report outcomes that were positive, or they'll switch primary and secondary outcomes to twist things to make it look a lot better. However, it's not something that has been assessed systematically in the field of diagnostic test accuracy, where people look at tools that have a range of possible thresholds, and then they use data-driven methods to determine the optimal cutoff score, and then they report results only for the cutoffs that work well and do not report results for cutoffs that do not work well. So in order to look at this systematically, I compared what happens when you conduct a traditional meta-analysis that uses only published results to conducting individual patient data meta-analysis, or IPD meta-analysis, where you have data available from all studies for all cutoffs. And I did this in the context of depression screening using the patient health questionnaire, the PHQ-9, as a screening tool of interest. So just to give a Canadian analogy of how a selective cutoff reporting could increase accuracy, So imagine if you're trying to shoot the puck at the net, empty net, you're going at it, you shoot, you're going to get a high portion of them in. Now, what happens if after you shoot the puck, you allow the net to move left or right in order to catch it? So if you can move the net, you're going to catch almost every puck. And that's exactly what happens in diagnostic test accuracy studies when people move the cutoff in order to catch the cutoff that works well. And then, so every study probably has one cutoff that works well, and by finding it, and then you say, oh, look, this tool is great because we found this one cutoff that is wonderful and it performs really highly. But different studies are actually reporting different cutoffs. So the net is moving all over the place and everyone's reporting something that works really, really well. So how does screening work? So I'm sure most of you already would understand this concept, but just to go over it a little quickly. So a bunch of people are screened, and let's say the red individuals are individuals who are truly diseased, and there's the cases, whereas the white ones are non-cases. And the idea with the screening tool is that you want to capture all the truly diseased patients, but you want to not capture the ones who are not diseased. So we have this net, and we're trying to capture the red individuals, but we don't want to be catching the ones who are white. So you want to kind of balance, you want to make the net big enough that you capture all the cases, but you don't want to be capturing people who are not cases. And one way that we can measure whether or not a tool is very good at distinguishing this is by measuring sensitivity and specificity, which is what I'll be focusing on. So the Patient Health Questionnaire 9, which is a screening tool that I looked at, it's one of the most commonly used depression screening tools, and it includes nine items. Total scores range from 0 to 27, with higher scores indicating more severe symptoms of depression. So basically, you have there's a range. So everyone scores from 0 to 27, and then you have to set the bar somewhere. So if you were to use a cutoff of 0 at one extreme, then everybody would be scoring above the cutoff, and you'd have perfect sensitivity. However, if you were to use the other end, if you use a cutoff of 27, everybody would be below the cutoff. You wouldn't capture anyone. You'd have perfect specificity. So basically, as you move the cutoff from 0 up until 27, you're going to be decreasing the sensitivity because you're going to catch less and less cases, but you increase the specificity. So a few years ago, this meta-analysis came out that it was a traditional meta-analysis of the Patient Health Questionnaire 9. And for every cutoff between 7 and 15, they found the pooled sensitivity and specificity for each cutoff value. And a result was found that was actually mathematically impossible. So if you look at the results between cutoffs 9, 10, and 11, you can see that as the cutoff threshold is increasing, so as we make it harder and harder to be diagnosed as a likely case, the sensitivity is increasing. And this doesn't make sense. You're making it harder to capture a case, yet you're capturing more of them. And then we wondered, like, what is causing this? And then if you look at the second column, which says these number of studies, you can see that there's a different number of studies being used in every cutoff because each you could only use the data that were available. So different studies are reporting data from different cutoffs, and then when you combine it, it's not giving a realistic picture of what's actually happening. So in order to look at this systematically, I wanted to compare the using traditional meta-analysis to using individual patient data where all data are available and see to what degree the selective reporting is actually having an effect on the diagnostic accuracy. Whether there are specific reporting patterns and score distributions in cases and on cases that could be explaining some of the findings. And also, given that the screening tool, which has 9 questions, and the diagnostic interview, which is used to actually diagnose depressed or not depressed, these are using much of the same questions, so they're quite similar. And so we wanted to look at heterogeneity and compare what happens when you use the same cutoff across all studies or when you cherry pick and use the optimal cutoff across all studies. So what we did is we went back to that originally published meta-analysis, and we contacted all the investigators whose data sets were in that published one, and we asked them if they would be willing to send us their raw data so that we could do an individual patient data meta-analysis. And we actually were able to obtain a large portion of the data. So there were 16 eligible data sets in that study. We got 13 of them, including 80% of the patients and over 90% of the cases of depression. And then for each data set, we extracted both the PHQ-9 scores, so the scores from the screening tool, as well as the depression diagnostic status from the diagnostic interview that was done by the psychiatrist. And we then did 2 sets of analyses. So the first set of analyses was much like the published meta-analysis that already existed. Is that for every cutoff, we only use the subset of data that were from studies that had reported the results for that particular cutoff. So if there was a cutoff where only 4 studies provided results, only those 4 studies were included in the meta-analysis for that particular cutoff. And then the next set of meta-analyses we did was using the individual patient data, so IPD meta-analysis, where we had access to data from all cutoffs from all studies because we had the raw data in hand. So regardless of what results a particular study published, all results from all studies were included in this analysis. So this really let us see what was going on behind the scenes. So this is just a comparison of the data that's available for the 2 different analyses. And you can see on the right side, which uses all of the data in the individual patient data meta-analysis, for every different threshold, we have data from all studies. So all 13 studies, all almost 5,000 patients for each of the cutoffs. Whereas if you look at the published data only, it's quite a mix. So for the cutoff 10, which is considered the standard for the screening tool, almost all of the studies report results. However, for all the other cutoffs, it's less than half the studies that are publishing results for these cutoffs. So the method that I use to estimate sensitivity and specificity is a bivariate random effects meta-analysis. And this it looks at sensitivity and specificity at the same time for each cutoff separately and accounts for the clustering by study and the correlation between sensitivity and specificity within a given study. So just to get into the first question of does selective cutoff reporting lead to exaggerated estimates of accuracy? So here you can see on the left side you have using published data only and on the right side using all of the data. So for cutoff 10, where most of the data was available, there's not a big difference. The sensitivity, 85, 87, specificity, 88 versus 88, so it's doing pretty well. However, for all of the other cutoffs where only less than half the data was available, the results are all over the place. And with like sensitivity, there's like a 10 to 12% difference at every cutoff value between the results that are used in traditional meta-analysis or results that we get using individual patient data meta-analysis. And just to look at this in a different way, so this is an ROC curve where we plot sensitivity versus specificity for every cutoff. And using all data, on the right side, you can see that as we go from cutoff 7 is in the top right, and then as we increase the cutoff there, so as we make it harder and harder to be diagnosed as a case, the sensitivity is decreasing and the specificity is increasing. This is exactly what we expect to see. However, on the left side, where you look at the published data only, you can see that it's a mess. This curve doesn't even make any sense. So we next wanted to look at reporting patterns and to see, are there predictable reporting patterns that can explain some of the results that we're seeing? So it's pretty striking, the result that we found for this question. So what this is that each of the different lines is a different study. The O represents the optimal cutoff from each of the different studies, and this is the cutoff within each study that had the maximum combined sensitivity plus specificity. And then the gray cells are the shaded ones. These are the ones that were published. And so you can see that if a study had a really low optimal cutoff, they published from that low optimal cutoff up until 10, which is the standard. Whereas if the study had a high optimal cutoff, they published from 10 up until that high optimal cutoff. So you can see that the reporting pattern is really following that trend of what is the most accurate cutoff in the study. And so what happens is that some studies just happen to be more sensitive than others. So if a study is highly sensitive and sensitive at every cutoff, then you can have a really high cutoff and still have a really you can have a high sensitivity and have a high specificity, because specificity increases with increasing cutoffs. However, if a study is poorly sensitive, then you have to bring that bar really low in order to get a good enough sensitivity. So then they publish really low optimal cutoff scores. And what happens when you put this together is you get this, like, this weird shape of, so in the orange line, you can see that using the IPT data, so using all the data, as you increase the PHQ-9 cutoff score, the sensitivity is slowly going down, and this makes sense. However, using the published data with the purple line, you can see that below 10, the estimates are underestimating the true sensitivity, whereas above 10, the estimates are overestimating the true sensitivity. And this is because we have a different set of data sets that are contributing to this published pooled result for each cutoff, and this is why it doesn't make any sense if you just look at what's published. So we just wanted to compare sensitivity and specificity. I've been focusing a lot on the sensitivity that was really different. And so the sensitivity is ranging from like the 10 to 12% off. However, with specificity, they're actually pretty identical. Everything's either the same or within 1%. So it's why specificity not affected, but sensitivity is. So this actually has to do with the distribution of the PHQ-9 scores between the two different the cases and the non-cases. So on the right, we have the cases, and cases are what are used to estimate sensitivity. And there's it's a normal distribution with a large chunk in the middle. So as you move the cutoff by one threshold in the middle range, you're moving a lot of people below or above the cutoff, and you're moving people. So you're gonna change the sensitivity quite a bit just by moving one cutoff. However, if you look at the non-cases, which are used to estimate specificity, most of the people are actually quite on the really low range, and they're not even at values that we would ever consider 0 or 1. So in the range of cutoffs that we're interested in, by moving the threshold by 1 point, we're not moving a lot of people. So that's why estimates of specificity remain stable, while the estimates of sensitivity change quite a bit. So finally, we wanted to look at heterogeneity and compare what happens if you use cutoff 10, which is a standard cutoff for all studies. So this is the left-hand column is using cutoff 10. Or if we cherry-pick and we pick out the optimal cutoff from each study, and this is on the right. And then so the top two graphs are for sensitivity, and the bottom two are for specificity. So for specificity, there's not much of a difference if you use cutoff 10 or if you cherry-pick and take that optimal one, but that optimal one was really driven by finding the one with the best sensitivity. So if you focus on the top two panels, you can see that if you use cutoff 10 across studies, the results are pretty heterogeneous. The range of sensitivity values vary quite a bit. However, if you cherry-pick and you take the optimal cutoff, then the sensitivity values are actually quite similar. So basically, we have this trade-off between a choice of cutoff or choice of sensitivity values. So you can either pick a homogeneous cutoff and have heterogeneous sensitivity values, or you can have a homogeneous sensitivity value and have heterogeneous cutoffs, because the range of optimal cutoffs range from 5 to 15. So just to come up, just to sum up everything, selective cutoff reporting is it's really common in depression studies of depression screening. It has a huge impact on the estimates that we're producing in traditional meta-analyses and IPD meta-analysis. When you have access to all data from all cutoffs, regardless of what is published, this is one method that we can overcome the problems that we're seeing in traditional meta-analyses. However, it is a huge endeavor to do so. It took me 2 years just to get the data for 13 studies. And also, if we want to take this a step back and what can we do to like prevent this in the future or make it easier for researchers to put data together, is that at the point where the primary study is published, they should have sample size calculations required so they can have a large enough number of cases and non-cases to be able to estimate sensitivity and specificity in a stable manner, and also. They should be required to report the results for all cutoffs and not just for the best ones. And this is easily done with using online appendices. So I just want to thank my supervisors, Andrew Bennett, Denny, and Brett Toombs, and the rest of my research group for their help with this.